Welcome back, everyone. And tonight on the show, we got Carlo of the Movie Loot Podcast and the 24 Wicca. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm fine. And you?
I cannot complain, but we are running out of time. And so we're just back discussing again the endless 24 TV show and movie saga. Yes, we will be talking about the season 7 prequel TV movie Redemption, which is set almost 4 years after season 6 and 2 months at least before season 7. Take a look.
This is an historic day marking the swearing in of America's first female president.
You're going to be the most powerful person in the world.
Our embassy in Sangala just got word of an imminent coup.
The order came down from the president. We're rolling up all U.S. nationals.
You are now soldiers in the People's Freedom Army.
This fall, history will be made.
Our involvement could avert a genocide.
A new enemy will rise.
We'll take back our country.
And the only hope to stop him disappeared.
I think they're headed for the school.
Until now.
Jack, don't let them take my kids.
Go with them now.
Where are the children?
Ah! In the trees now, move!
My fellow citizens, we all share the responsibility. Our future depends on it.
Open the gate!
Kiefer Sutherland returns in 24.
Adding to that, we then got season 7, which is set not only shortly after the Redemption movie, but it begins at 8 a.m. in the morning. Jack Bauer is assisted by the FBI and covert operatives when a firewall for America's federal computer infrastructure is breached by the same people responsible for a war conflict in the fictional South African country of Sangala. He must uncover corruption within President Taylor's administration, which has allowed the Sangalans to raid the White House and capture her. She's later blackmailed by a fictional private military company named Starkwood in an attempt to release biological weapons on U.S. soils. Things are not any easy when Jack is demanded by various bureaucrats to serve prison time for past misdeeds and interrogation methods. He will have to rely on old friends, some previously thought dead, and new strategies to put an end to all this madness.
We've done so many secret things over the years. In the name of protecting this country, we've created two worlds. Ours, and the people we promised to protect.
When I am brought into a situation, there is a reason to complete the objectives of my mission at all costs.
Following that, 18 months later, beginning at 4 p.m. in the day, in season 8, Jack is later brought in by CTU, the Counterterrorism Division's New York unit, to uncover a Russian plot to assassinate Islamic leader Omar Hassan during a peace negotiation with President Taylor. Through various Islamic extremist threats and a dirty bomb reveal, Jack also later seeks retribution for a personal loss suffered from another shady figure from his past, crooked President Charles Logan. In addition to that, Jack later finds himself, once again, a fugitive on the run while trying to stop a Russian and American agreement that could further harm the entire world.
Jack?
You're supposed to call me Grandpa.
You look like a grandpa.
Couldn't agree with you more. Listen, I've been thinking a lot about what we talked about. I want to move back to Los Angeles with you.
Dad, I don't know what to say.
Come here. What are you doing here?
I have information. There's a big hit going down.
I don't work for the government anymore.
Unless you're going to want to hear. President Hassan at the UN. He's getting taken out. Today.
Jack Bauer's on line 3.
Bauer?
You need to pay attention to this.
Get out!
On January 17th.
I'm transporting an informant vital to national security.
The Emmy Award-winning series returns.
Go! Go!
We're under attack.
We are code red.
With a 2-night, 4-hour premiere event.
This is going down now. Innocent lives are at stake.
Kiefer Sutherland.
This is over!
You're lucky I'm retired.
24.
So once again, Carl, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So just a quick scoop. So this was kind of where I got into the show and then went back. You know, I had seen clips of it growing up, but, you know, it was just, you missed one. It did not replay. It was not like, Frasier or Star Trek where, you miss it. Don't wait. Just wait a few weeks. It'll be on again at a different time. What got you in general into kind of action, crime, or mystery, and even possibly horror shows?
I've been a movie and TV fan ever since I was a kid. So it was kind of logical that I would eventually fall into this show and start watching this show. So as far as action, I mean, Die Hard is my favorite action movie. So
good parallel. I've often agreed with many that this is basically if Alfred Hitchcock made a Die Hard miniseries every year, you know. And you mentioned we've known each other a while ago on the various Wiccas, and basically, you know, it's like I was in the same boat in college. You know, I was not only watching the 24 shows, but also The Shield and The Wire, and, you know, I came to appreciate stuff that, you know, friends and family had grown up liking, like Oz and The Sopranos and Seinfeld, you know, and it's like, I understood how any kind of show could get any kind of a big audience. And then it was even more fun when you saw various actors trying to make a transition to either the big screen or another hit TV show, or how filmmaking, you know, there was no limit to it. It could be edgy, it could be hypnotizing, it could be addicting and have either a serialized story or a standalone story with an occasional, you know, recurring, you know, menace or storyline. And at this point, yeah, TV was just trying to be, basically every show was just trying to be as different and its own thing as it could be, while trying to gain some new viewers casually every year and make them go and, you know, buy the previous DVD sets or subscribe to Hulu or Netflix, you know?
Yeah. And one interesting thing is that something that you mentioned, 24 is maybe not the first, but probably one of the first shows that popularized that serialized continuity through a series of episodes of a show. Because before that, in the 80s, the most popular stuff was usually procedurals or standalone episodes, like you mentioned. And
the grim stuff often got played later at night, like Miami Vice or The Equalizer, which some of these guys have worked on. And, you know, at this point, midway through season 7, co-creator, you know, Joel Surnow had taken a backseat and let lead writer Howard Gordon, who had worked with him on Nikita and a bunch of other shows, just kind of do what he wanted. And the other co-creator, Bob Cochran, was also, he would come back later and do a lot of scripts for when they went to London. But yeah, that at this point, you know, it had a bunch of different things. Basically, you know, they had to react to the complaints they got about season 6, and they just, another complaint was often that it couldn't one up season 5. Season 5 was just too brilliant.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
And I mean, in many ways, I mean, for me, this was just kind of more, I see other people complain, oh, it's all about Jack or President Palmer. It's like, for me, it was always just the multi-character integration. You know, here we got Tony, previously thought dead. And, you know, aside from that implausibility, he's totally a changed man. To me, that's where it felt like it was kind of trying to be like the other Fox show, Prison Break, where you got all these guys. They got their crew, they got their various skill sets, and they got triple agendas, not just double agendas, triple.
And it was this season is interesting because, like you, I think this was the first one that I saw live. The previous seasons, I kind of got up.
That writer's strike and that delay helped.
Yeah, definitely. And maybe we can get to that later. But the previous season 1 through 5, I caught up on DVD after the fact. And season 6, I believe I rented it shortly after it ended. But this was the first season that I actually watched live. And that exactly that thing that you mentioned, I think one of the things I like about this season is that it feels the script and the story feels tighter than other seasons. And I think that strike helped.
I'm glad you say that, because like I've had more luck. Most people like to start all from the get-go. I have way more luck. I actually would show this to my grandmother before she passed away, but I would show it to so many other people. Like, I often had the best luck if I showed them some of season 3 and 4, but 7's kind of the same thing. You get kind of the general gist of what's going on and you want to know more, and it just grabs you. And I do feel like a lot of that tension is just kind of averted in season 8. I saw some people saying, I'm glad they cut the politics out. And to me, when they rolled around, I didn't really care about them, because usually, you know, President Taylor just didn't have what you kind of had with David or Wayne Palmer, or even the VPs, where they want to instantly be alerted, you know, the second something goes down. And so, because I don't know, I just always thought it had a more personal feeling, kind of like on those Law and Order and even Bones shows, where you got the, you know, someone who has to answer to the press, you know, us, the civilians, you know, just say, hey, here's what's going on, or here's the cover story I'm telling you, and I'm going to stall until, you know, it's too late. And I got to say, we've filled, everyone evacuate. I think it was also a mistake for director John Cassar, who was also one of the lead producers, to leave in season 8, because I just had trouble always just seeing some of the quickly cut fight scenes. And there was just a certain amount of energy and edits that just wasn't quite there in season 8 that there was in season 7.
Yeah. Season 8, a lot of people agree with this, but season 8 started pretty bad. I mean, the first half of the season, it's really weak. It's probably
some of those subplots, they could have gone on way longer. Here we got freaking the guy who played Acevedo, the, you know, captain on the Shield.
He's, yeah,
Jack.
We just one episode.
yeah. The other episode is he's just a corpse. But it's like, I thought that was so cool. I'm like, I was like, remember the Salazars and how I got you in? I need you. You owe me. Help me. I'm like, okay. And well, so one compliment I will give is, at least once again, this is mostly Kim Bauer free, much like season 5, 4, and 6. But it's like, yeah, he's so not getting on that plane with her and her newlywed husband. It is also interesting too, is like the minute you see the rockets flying, you're like, yeah, I mean, that Jack still has his modus operandi, but he is really showing his age there, and not in a good way. Like, it just seems very forced. And I used to like FBI agent Renee Walker, and it's just so cool just seeing how, kind of like Tony and Curtis, she always wanted to be like Jack, even though she spites him 1 minute and then respects him the next. And then, you know, much like either of those two, even maybe Chase and, you know, Doyle in a way, is like, she just burns her bridges and breaks the law, and basically the only alternative is like, okay, we got you a good lawyer and we're gonna fire you, since you nearly killed, you know, one of the main big bads, you know.
Yeah. And but a lot of credit to Annie Wershing, because she does a great job with the character.
Oh yeah, and good actress. And
yeah,
she was then on Bosch, which also has a lot of 24 CSI actors on it, and
and The Wire,
the Borg Queen on Picard. So Annie Wershing, good.
Yeah,
damn good job. I just wish they could have handled her character way better in the second season.
I have issues with how they, she sold it,
don't get me wrong, the performance is amazing. Just like,
yeah,
she cries so naturally, and like, you feel the aura of, it's just like, you fucking have destroyed me and I will do anything, you know, to make you feel the pain that I feel. But it was just annoying, because they had said in interviews, you know, prior, there's like, they had outlined it, and it just felt, it just couldn't help but feel like last minute. And I'm like, damn it.
Yeah, because the issue that I have is that that switch that they have from how she was in season 7 to how she was in season 8. I mean, in season 7, they made a big issue of how she's a relatively naive and idealistic agent that ends up being quote-unquote corrupted by Jack's methods, which is highlighted in the end when, like you said, she ends up torturing Alan Wilson. But then they bring her back in season 8, and they say that before season 7, she used to be a greedy, rough, undercover agent that spent years with a Russian arms dealer. It just doesn't add up. And it would have made more sense if they shifted that to after season 7.
I don't know. And by this point, they're just... did you ever notice with the even number seasons, they basically repeat season 2? Like, season 4 and 6, once again, have an Islamic, radical leader. And same kind of deal here. And I'm sorry, I don't remember any of these bad guys. And they are all respectable, good actors. Like, the one guy who basically pulls a Terminator and starts imitating police officers' voices and is like, okay, that dude was good in Batman Begins and a few other British programs. And I've seen the other guy, Maito Hamada, plays, in a bunch of other stuff, but they don't have what Fayed or Marwan had in those earlier seasons.
No.
And even though Francesco Quinn's, Sayid Ali's character in season 2 is just technically the tertiary or fifth villain.
He was just like a money guy.
He was a terrorist for hire, but even though he's not the main guy and you kind of forget about him midway through, he still had some range because in that, that was where Jack was compromising his ethics and saying, I'm going to make you believe that I've just killed your family overseas, with a special ops team. And it's like, so he was in some key moments and he was well played. And it helps that. It helps when you're the son of a famous actor, Anthony Quinn. it's like, yeah, these guys, they do not stand out for me. There's even one who's often a comedic role, the guy with the glasses, who's like doing some soldering and everything. And again, you got Hergen Prochnow from freaking Das Boot. And I just thought all of them were just...
Wasted. I actually had that written in my notes. I had wasted villains.
wasted. Before they get wasted, they're already wasted. And I mean, I know many people complained about Freddie Prinze Jr. And I don't think
he did a great job.
He's good for what he is. I think his character is just more, it's just annoying. It's a chase rehash.
Yeah. I don't know if I just walked in with low expectations regarding Freddie Prinze Jr.
He didn't have much to work with. And I mean, he's good in other places, and there's other times where he's whiny. And I was just like, the main issue is apparently it's kind of come out a little bit later that he kind of got the wrong impression that he was going to be kind of replacing Kiefer on the show. And so that didn't sit well.
Yeah, he lashed at Kiefer in social media.
Totally. And friend of the show, Ryan G. Richardson, he and a bunch of the other guys were able to get in the various Facebook groups and do a unofficial reunion. And when they just interviewed a few actors and they picked other people's brains, and next thing you know, they did a full, giant convention to where even the creators asked if they could come. But the only person who was not invited back there was Freddie.
I actually hosted one of the
round
tables. Yeah. And one of the things they told us, I don't know if you have to edit this, but one of the things they told us, don't bring up Freddie Prinze Jr.
Ryan mentioned that. And it was one of those, is like, hey, he was a cool casting choice at the time, but it just behind the scenes got a little intense. And it's a shame because any other time, I've never heard of any other just kind of moment that got semi-unprofessional other than, and I think as close as it got was Carlos Bernard, who plays Tony, did a prank on Mia Kirshner, who played the assassin Mandy in season 4. And that just meant they lost 2 hours of film and they said, don't do that damn thing again.
John Cassar hated him for that.
And this is a shame because they're just all best friends. He's like, if you were anyone else, I would have had you fired on the spot. you just can't do that. And I think Carlos got wise, and fortunately he didn't, kill all his connections. He's now a great director on all the, CBS shows.
Doing a lot of stuff.
And I think this is it too. Like, this feels too much. Season 8 just feels so much like a CSI New York episode. And I was like, New York's been done to that, Die Hard with a Vengeance bunch. It's just, they should have, I guess, I don't know. I would have preferred just maybe Jack going around the country a little more. And don't get me wrong, it is cool seeing him dispatch Logan's various goons, and he almost comes close to almost recreating his role as the Kiefer almost comes close to recreating his role as the sniper in Phone Booth, where he's like, I might assassinate Logan. And I don't know, I didn't like how Chloe didn't get much to do. She apparently, there's some extended scenes on the DVDs and Blu-rays that you can sync up with the episodes, but to me it's kind of like the Terminator 2, you know, special edition. It's like, it's just complimentary. And she deserved better than just, like, I hate especially how she has to literally, it's back to office politics where she has to literally arrest someone who is not respecting her because he doesn't respect women and everything. And I'm just was like, yeah, I think she can be a little more clever than that. I think she can actually, you know.
Yeah,
how it should have been is she should have locked him out of his terminal.
Yeah.
And she should have been, you're going to give me your badge, and you're going to walk out the door. It's like, boom. Didn't have to be like three episodes where she finally holds him at gunpoint and says, and I will say, the worst episode of the entire show is when they lose power. That goddamn AMP episode just pisses me off. Because it just feels just... It just goes on way too long for like 2.5 episodes. And you know, Jack's not really dead, but it just, they couldn't help themselves. And I think writer David Fury summed it up better. Is like, the problem we keep finding ourselves is we wrote ourselves into a corner, because the only way for the show to end is if Jack dies. And at the same time, we don't want to kill him because we've created such a fascinating character. So I think that is it. They just pull their puppet strings a little too clear, and the circus acts and other tricks that they have to display are just, they let too many rabbits out of the bag. That one.
Yeah, that's just an issue with you know, handling this kind of show with 24 episodes and they have to be continuous, which is the show's gimmick. It works great and it's creative, inventive, but at some point you're gonna have to, like you said, jump through some hoops
season. It can't be helped. It's gonna happen, unfortunately.
And one thing that you'll notice in pretty much every season, there's at least 1, 2, maybe 3 filler episodes that you notice that they're trying to stretch things to like fill up.
Hats off to Katie Sackhoff. You know, she just embellished Star, and I loved hearing that interview with her for that other podcast, because at this point she really got to stretch herself playing a villainess. And at the time she had said, her agent had said, you know, just come in, do your work, don't really leave any notes, you don't want to risk sounding like, you know, a diva or anything. And fortunately the writers actually did heavily involve all the actors in their characters, so she gave them some notes, and I think she did a good job. She's Myers or Mandy, obviously, but she did a good job playing the mole. And
I like her, and she didn't know she was gonna
got a good job. Is like, and she kind of gave her a cool kind of bipolar kind of feel. It's like, yeah, you've been lying, telling the same lie, living it. So yeah, you're like 3 different people. And then it finally turns out, yeah, no, I'm a anti-American radicalist who's helping these, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things with season 8 is that even though that first half was pretty weak, I think they pretty much raised the stakes in the second half. And the second half it's pretty good. I mean, that all that sequence with Jack going bananas and chasing after Logan, it's pretty kick-ass, and I really liked it.
I know we've gone a little over season 7, but I mean, season 7 I really don't have too much pickles with, other than that there's a few too many bad guys, but at the same time that's kind of also a highlight. I mean, just having a Blackwater type company run by John Boyd and Tony Todd as General Juma, you know, there's Worf's brother from Star Trek and the Candyman himself, just dynamite. As I think he definitely ranks up there with Marwan from season 4 and any of the other earlier villains, you know, Saunders, the Drazens, because he has no shame. He's like, yeah, I'm. And it is kind of funny how movies like Olympus Has Fallen and all those other movies and shows are kind of like, okay, you're gonna do it, but is it gonna be as cool as how they did it on 24?
Yeah. I like I said, going back to what I said at the first, I really like season 7. I don't know if it's, like I said, if it's because it was the first one that I saw live, or like I said, the what I sense was a tighter script.
Was just unfair to it because they just had really not liked season six. And so it just stinks that it only takes one season for people to slowly tune out. I know some people kind of did that with season three. They didn't like how it began, so they stopped watching. And it's just like, it was now during the streaming age, I think it's going to take an about face. People are going to keep going through it like plenty of other shows, and not having to set the VCR or DVR does make a difference.
And maybe like you said, after season six, people were a bit skeptic. And I think one of the things that had me a bit like wary was the return of Tony, because it felt pulled by the hairs and a bit ludicrous, you know, to have him, oh, he's alive because, you know, they injected him with something.
Yeah, there's some Easter eggs and dialogue, and it's like they had kind of planned it, and the actor had even begged, just like, hey, I know a way.
Tony's my favorite character, so as soon as he got back and I kind of settled on the idea, okay, he's back, okay, let's as ludicrous as it seemed, but he's back, and I like what they did with character.
And by this point, you know, Jack's not even really talking about his dead wife anymore, or could have, should have had a better life. Pretty much he's just like, okay, Kim, stay away from me, and if you never need anything, call me, but I'll probably be at work recruited. And I love how they also, you know, again in the Redemption movie and in season eight, I just wish these guys could have gotten more screen time as Robert Carl, you know, the full Monty in 28 Weeks Later. Yeah. A special forces guy that had worked with Jack and was now doing African relief work. But, you know, Michael Madsen, that was icing on the cake, and he does not get enough screen time. I'm like, damn it, he should have been in the other seasons. Just as
He stays like just in his room pretty much all the
He's an ex special forces guy, and he does like, he basically sells, you know, black market weapons to like private security companies and other shit. It's like, hey, you know, Jack, you left him too early. You could have convinced him. He's like, hey, man, you want to help me do a suicide mission? You know, just track goons for me with Chloe. And I mean, I also, season seven, it's cool seeing, again, you know, how President Taylor, you know, just lets her guard down. She has no idea how power hungry her scheming husband is, and how her Secret Service agents are also working for the terrorists, and basically, you know, brown nosed enough to where they basically just, again, they compromise her security, and her daughter, you know, plans a few murders. She's like, I did it for you. I'm like, you still had someone killed. Killing political opponents, not cool, daughter. But I loved how we saw Secret Service agent Pierce. And one issue I had is just, again, he should have come back. There was no reason to just not have him back, unless I guess he was still taking care of former First Lady Martha. But
yeah, and I think that one of the writers or one of the creators, or I don't know if it was the showrunners, they were trying to find ways to write him into season eight or one of the later seasons, but they just couldn't find
been
something
cool had he, I don't know, just been a private eye. He's like, I resigned from the Secret Service, and I'm gonna help out Jack.
He's a great guy. Glenn Morshower, he was in on that convention.
I've had many pals who have taken his Dallas acting class. He is
And he stayed even with us chatting afterwards, and a really, really great guy.
Natural human being, just very very visually rewarding. And they could have worked him into the London one. It's like, how cool that of it is. Like, Mr. Heller, thank you, sir. I'm in special detail. And they just never seem to do that. They're just like, no, he's too old. I'm like, damn it. And it does sting. You ask some of the writers, they wrote so much. They just, you know, without the Wicca that you worked on, they just don't remember all the names. And that's a shame, because I just think, I don't know, it's like a little more careful planning would have been good. I think my bigger issue with season eight was, at the time, this did seem it. Like, it seemed like this was the final time we're going to ever see any semblance of the show before the other two seasons came along. So I'm glad it's at a 10-year run. And at the same time, I'm just like, yeah, they could have still planned a few other things. And while it is, but, you know, at that time, I wasn't digging certain seasons of other shows like CSI or NCIS, and, you know, other new shows were starting, like, you know, Mad Men and Community. So it's like, TV was just I think the bigger issue was just TV was nonstop changing at that point, where you're just like, whoa, okay. You know, it's just, now there's no telling what's going to happen next. And I guess it's also just a good thing it ended when it did, because otherwise they would have had to keep finding different ways and have to keep renegotiating contracts. You know?
Yeah. And I think that they ended the way season 8 ended. I liked it, how they closed with Chloe leading CTU, even though they turned it off at the end. But that final episode with Jack on the run and looking at her on the screen, I thought it was a great send-off, even if they came back again for the other seasons. But I thought that was a great quote-unquote ending for the show.
It ended where it ended. I'm just glad they came back to London and changed it up a bit.
We don't want your money. We just need you to fix something for us.
The CIP firewall protects every major infrastructure system in this country. If it were breached, they would all be vulnerable. One of the men behind this threat is someone you know.
You think Tony is looking for justice by attacking this country?
Help me find Almeida and you can ask him yourself.
Tell me where the device is!
I don't understand. Almeida was orchestrating these attacks. If he doesn't have the CIP device, who does?
Almeida's working for the Juma regime.
An estimated 300,000 have been killed.
General Juma has to be stopped.
You will have your forces withdrawn from around my country, Sangala, immediately,
or 10,000 Americans will die.
Jack, Tony is not a terrorist. He's working deep cover. We need your help to get Tony out of there.
Stop! Get him! Go!
Gibraco's the key to this thing. If we're going to uncover the conspiracy, we have to get to him before he leaves the U.S.
Disengage the CIP module.
Jack, I've got the CIP device. It's been destroyed.
What the hell's going on?
Tony doubled back to one of his contacts, who gave him information of a second attack. It's going to take place here in Washington within the hour.
What? Juma's in D.C.?
Mr. Vice President, terrorists are in control of the White House.
We need to secure her in the first floor lockdown.
President Taylor.
God, no.
If you don't open the door, I'm going to cut out your daughter's eyes one by one.
You've got me now. There's no reason to hold anyone else.
We need to pick him off to try and save the president.
A suicide play, Jack.
We don't have a choice.
Don't you move!
Juma and his men were not working alone.
If Bauer connects us to Juma, it could seriously impede this operation.
Once the weapons are deployed, then it doesn't matter what Mr. Bauer or anyone else knows.
Starkwood was involved with everything that's happened today. They were the ones that helped Juma and his men bring down those planes and attack the White House. In exchange, they were allowed to develop a bioweapon. Apparently, it's already here in the U.S.
Starkwood has 13 Python missiles.
Those missiles are now loaded with a pathogen
and aimed at cities on our eastern seaboard.
Tony Almeida is still inside Starkwood. He believes he can gain access to the fuel depot and take the missiles out.
Have you secured the bioweapon?
I'm afraid not, ma'am. What happened?
Tony's been playing both sides all along. He's trying to kill the man who's behind this conspiracy. His name is Alan Wilson. He was responsible for killing Tony's wife, Michelle. That's why he's doing this. It wasn't just my wife. She was carrying my son. You killed my son! And now I'm gonna kill you.
Tony, don't move.
Here at the United Nations, Presidents Taylor and Hassan will be holding a joint press conference. It is widely expected that President Hassan will announce the dismantling of his country's nuclear weapons program.
There's a big hit going down, President Hassan, at the UN.
When?
Today.
Someone is trying to make sure that this peace agreement does not happen.
Cole, you need to stop that car. Hassan's a dead man.
It's too late. Hassan's car just exited the tunnel.
I need to know about my brother.
He's alive.
Brother was involved with the attack. He's the insider.
Killing President Hassan was only part of his brother's plans. He's also trying to acquire weapons-grade uranium. When can I take possession of the rods?
As soon as we have the money. We must find the Russians before they can get the uranium to my brother.
You know who I am?
All I know is that there's a very powerful man in the Russian syndicate who's been trafficking weapons-grade uranium.
Who do you work for?
I'm not at liberty to say.
I will tell you where the rods are.
We
can't get the rods out of the country, so let's use them as a radiological bomb.
IRK nationalists are targeting New York with a dirty bomb.
Turn over President Hassan.
I will not sell him out to the very terrorists that we are determined to defeat.
What are you suggesting?
We deliver Hassan to the terrorists, but make it look like they took him hostage.
They have Hassan. We have the bomb.
Damn you, Rob.
The president wants us to do everything we can to recover Hassan.
CTU is following you.
Can you find me an exit?
Damn it, they've made us. He's breaking left. I repeat, he's breaking left. Coming straight at me, damn it!
Have you got Hassan?
No, someone inside CTU's got to be tipping him off.
Stay where you are and keep your hands where I can...
Stop screwing with me!
They are going to force him to make a statement and then they're going to kill him.
You will announce the peace agreement. I will never do that.
Looks like Samir's wrapping it up. You need to get in there right now.
We're going home. We're done. I'll be right back. Renee!
I'm sorry she didn't make it.
Renee thought she recognized somebody from the Russian mob.
I already know that you killed Renee Walker. What I want to know is the name of the Russian pig that gave the order.
Look, if you're so worried about Bauer, you never should have given the order to kill Renee Walker.
We can't stand by and let Jack assassinate the president of Russia.
The suspect is Jack Bauer. He's considered armed and dangerous.
You have to kill Suvorov. There's another way. The audio file you recorded, we can use it to expose Suvorov.
We'll do it your way, but you gotta promise me you'll see this through. If you don't shoot me, that file's not going anywhere.
Don't ask me to do something I can't do.
Damn it, Lloyd, pull the trigger.
I'm not gonna do it.
Grave crimes have been committed in the run-up to this treaty. Before there can be a meaningful peace, justice must be served.
The Russians will be coming after you. Leave the country while you still have a chance.
Chloe, thank you.
Overall, I mean, again, you're going to watch all these seasons anyway, so... I think it starts off pretty cool and then has some occasional surprises. And again, you know, as much as I should on season 8, you are going to watch it. It just had some annoying fights. Like, there's plenty of scenes where he just punches someone and they're not even bleeding. And you're like, oh, come on. He pistol whipped a dude there. But yeah, if you can get for some of the annoying subplots, it is better. It's just a little junky, but
even subplots that, like, for example, a lot of people criticize the subplot about with Katie Sackhoff. I forgot her name. Dana?
Yeah, Dana Walsh and
Dana Walsh.
Malik, before he was well known as a terrorist.
Yeah. Well, they criticize that subplot a lot, but I really like the performance, her performance and the performance of the guy. The guy that played her ex-boyfriend, Kevin Wade.
Chase Crawford.
Clayne Crawford.
He played Riggs on the Lethal Weapon show. Yeah, and got
he's a great there. Actor, man.
He is a good actor, man. Yeah.
Yeah, they shafted him in that show. But
they just should have casted him and just let him know, hey, don't go method acting, man.
But I think he did a great job. And if anybody starts to watch season 8, just know that the season is starts pretty bad, but you have some cool performances to look forward to, and the second half of the season is pretty cool. So I think that's a must.
Totally. And overall, I mean, where would you like to see this show go? I mean, obviously we'll get to the other seasons later, but
I would definitely like one last season, and I was the
not a miniseries, you know, just a movie, man. But they seem to just not be able to do the movie because for whatever reason it just is too costly. So
yeah, they've been at it for more than 10 years, I think.
Someone's gonna have to take a pay cut or something, and I don't know why TV is just cheaper versus a movie, but it is. And
I always like the pitch that one of my friends at the wiki. It's one of the pitches that he threw, and I really liked it. You know how they've been teasing one season that would be like a prequel with a young Jack Bauer or something like that. Sort of like a Godfather 2 type season where you get 1 hour with Jack Bauer.
You got me sold with that pitch, because originally when they did it, it just sounded like they were getting desperate. I was more sold on the legal aspect where Howard Gordon basically took an unused Homeland script where let's call all these lawyers and they're trying to stop a terrorist attack at a Capitol building.
I don't think that I think they just dumped that, but that just like 1 hour young Jack, another hour the adult Jack being,
or just Tony. How about the prison? Tony and Chloe show?
Tony's the one that has to rescue him. But
I thought of that too. It ends as soon as they rescue Jack. They just have Aaron Pierce call some special forces guys.
They were hinting also at the possibility that the Corey Hawkins from Legacy could be also.
I would love that
would rescue him. But
Jimmy Smits becomes the president, and he gets to be the Secret Service agent who's also detailing a potential terrorist attack that's might not only be connected to some other guys, but could also. We could find a way to navigate and have it be, I don't know, just stopping war between other countries again and doing the whole, is like, I got a NABA assassin who knows where Jack is. And fortunately, the books of 24 that are prequels to the season 9 London season and are set after season 8, you know, those were so cool because the authors acknowledged your guys' Wicca, you know, and I loved how they had it. That first novel was really epic. I forget what it was called. It was like 24 one shot or something like that. Not one shot. It was Rogue or something. And
yeah, I don't know. I haven't read any of the books.
Anyway, it came out, you know, before the 2014 season, and it was cool in that it just showed that Jack was on the run, basically had to say goodbye to Kim the last time, stopped some Russian guys from trying to kill her to get him out of his hiding. And got a helping hand from Chase, you know, previously found dead in L.A. And then he blackmails Mandy to basically, okay, don't kill me and just smuggle me across the border, you know, because at that point he's still heavily injured. He needs time to heal. I don't know what kind of painkillers he kept taking, but he took something. I think those books are all worth a read. All the books are pretty good because I guess, again, the universe is just so dense, so thick that it was too brilliant for its own good.
it lends itself to different countless stories.
They keep trying to develop it. I think a crossover with Prison Break would be the bee's knees.
Well, who knows? Who knows?
And about just the have game, Schofield, you know? comes in and saves Jack.
Prison Break.
Prison Break. Boom.
Just, you know,
box.
An interesting thing about the game is that I talked with one of the designers a while ago, and he told me that I don't remember the name. Char something. I don't know. I don't remember. Don't quote me. And he told me how they were pressured, that they had so many ideas, but halfway through the design process, they realized that they had bite more than they could chew, and they had to rush towards the end and pretty much dump most of what they had planned to do with the for the game. But he told me, I know we're proud of what we did, but we really had to pretty much cut half of what we wanted to do for the game.
Money, man.
I think that the developer, whatever, had put a pretty tight deadline, and they just couldn't do it within that time frame.
I mean, I know they're older now, they're still got the looks, but it's also a shame that everyone wants more of even David Palmer, or even seeing more of Michelle or Curtis, and this is like, there's just all these other characters who you know, could have carried their own show. They're just that intriguing, and it's also just, I don't know, I think, you know, it was on the right network, and any other channel would have just, I don't know, just found it too over the top.
They could have. They always did a decent job of balancing different stories and different characters across the season. But I always thought that they could have shifted more away from Jack and into other characters that had interesting stories and interesting.
Well, that's just it too. Like my perspective. I know this is a powerful show when my perspective changes every time I watch it, because it's like I'm paying attention to different elements each time and. Musical scores, you know, the suspense, and even just other little subtle things that the actors add to their characters, where it's like, yeah, I never noticed that he drinks coffee a certain way, or he gets that you know, season seven, it was interesting. I maybe the only guy really knows is like Chloe gets to actually get some sleep that day. She gets to go home.
One of the few times that we see a character sleeping or getting some sleep.
Yeah. And obviously Jack gets knocked out enough times, so I count that as sleep, but yeah, it was wild too. How, I mean, I think in season eight, they should have just brought Tony back again, but he should have just been, whether it was, he should have maybe done a Two-Face thing instead of like, he could have maybe tried to get in with the gang that Dana was part of and infiltrated their weapons dealers and worked with Madsen or something. And the whole catch 22 is he works behind Jack's back after he gains his trust and escapes. But unlike most people, I was actually pleased with them bringing him back in Legacy. Is like, I buy that even more. He's working, you know, shady, you know, covert ops jobs, but
yeah,
you know, he's still has a price. He still is a more than just a gun for hire at this point. He refuses to do terrorist activities. That was just to get close to the heart of the beast and stab it where it was, because it was just for his dead wife, Michelle.
He was definitely one of the better things of that season.
He was the Punisher.
Yeah. But that season, Legacy, that show was not that good. I really didn't like it.
No, good. I think the other issue with, I mean, there's plenty of issues in every season. And I think, you know, like season five, I think, again, you know, as brilliant as we put it, it was also very steroid induced, but because it's such an uncommon storyline that season, we don't really notice some of the errors made in time and all that. And, you know, when they went with Live Another Day in London, it was like, okay, you know, now it's cool seeing Ching back, but there were plenty of other guys who were just simple red herrings as opposed to effective villains. And
yeah,
the CIA really doesn't act any differently than CTU, unfortunately. But yeah, Legacy is like, I kind of like the main character, but they did spend a little too much time on the gangster subplots, when even though it was just 12 episodes. And I think the overall thing is, I don't know, they should have just had a few more connections. And I mean, at this point, all the actors have also just done way better work. Again, the unit is excellent and doesn't get talked about enough. I could totally do an episode on that if you've seen it.
No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, man.
But now that you mentioned it, I might check it out.
Yeah, it's on Hulu, last I checked. But yeah, it's seeing Dennis Haysbert, you know, President Palmer, just do, again, just a very moody Special Forces guy. And I mean, Designated Survivor and Madam Secretary, I thought, did a good job of balancing West Wing kind of, you know, political cat and mouse, and their connections to 24 was just that again. You know, the characters had a bunch of giant intel and were supervising some infiltration of saboteurs that were trying to bring down the nation. And it's just, they're all different beasts. Don't get me wrong. Adam Secretary is kind of more of a comedy drama, and Designated was more of a
drama.
It's more of a drama, but yeah, it's like the action and mystery just kind of to begin and end the season, and it's kind of more, I guess, a little more classier in some aspects. And you know, 24 a while, I think after a while they just couldn't help them. It's like, well, okay, we're given a platform to be shocking, so we're going to keep being shocking, and sometimes it's just a little silly.
I never got to the final season, the season three, the one that they released. I think it was on Netflix. I never got around to that one.
I totally recommend, but I called it the President Jack Bauer and FBI agent Nikita show. It helped that it was by some of the same guys that done Criminal Minds. So, I mean, that would be cool. 24 Criminal Minds. That won't happen.
You have a lot of crossovers in your mind.
There's so many crossovers that would be awesome, but they just, unfortunately, since we have too many companies that own different entities, I mean, it is an ABC co-production, and this is a Fox co-production. They're both owned by the same company, but you just know that CBS will cock block it. They'll just say, nope, that's our baby. That's our 24. You keep your, you stay in your corner.
Don't mess with our baby.
Even though we got plenty of Hodge and Morgan and Prentice who got as almost as many tortured storylines as Bauer and Renee and Tony. Oh God. Thank you ever so much for being on here and just summing up kind of just the fun, just addicting thing. Any other just shows that you would recommend people these kinds of shows kind of get into?
Oh, well, I'm watching so many films nowadays that I really don't have time for a lot of TV shows, but I still watch some stuff.
I think if you guys like these, check out Justified, Ray Donovan, Yellowstone, even freaking the Power franchise. This is like the one Chicago shows, especially Chicago Fire, will be an easy binge because you just know that even if it's a mystery of the week, you're still going to have a lot of other serialized, you know, stuff. Like, is someone going to get rid of their drug addiction? Is everyone going to disarm this bomb in time?
No, but going to some go-to recommendations, some shows that I usually recommend because they're a little bit more obscure and not as talked much. But, well, one that we did mention, Bosch, I think it's a really good show.
Bosch is a perfect parallel. Yeah. And what's funny is a lot of people who watch that one were kind of more into like SVU or The Shield or The Closer. Yeah. And I'm like, those work too. But like that, the 24 connections, they're there. I mean, even the guy who's one of Juma's guys doing the computer hacking I saw was one of the patrol officers on there. And I was like, what a cool role of actor expansion for that dude. And
yeah.
Harry Bosch is very similar to Jack. It's just, he's a bad father the next, and then he just tries to let out his inner demons and change.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's a really good show that I think has a lot of shadings of The Wire as well.
Yeah, The Wire especially. I mean, come on.
Deep or complex, but
you got Lance Reddick and Jamie Hector.
But there's also... There's a really cool show that is very obscure, but I usually recommend it. It's called Fortitude. I don't know if you've seen it.
That's a good parallel because, like, and obviously I recommend the other Law and Orders, like Organized Crime was cool, having Stabler have his own show. But yeah, Fortitude was a cool way of, I mean, a lot of the 24 writers worked on the X-Files. And for me prior, that was definitely a must watch because of what great acting and, gory terror and mystery was on that one. But yeah, I mean, Fortitude, I think, is a perfect example of many shows trying to recapture kind of the X-Files mystery of the week and some Twin Peaks kind of, you know, here's a forbidden town that not just anyone can enter, you know?
Yeah. I thought that was a really good show. And for something maybe a bit more lighter or a bit crazier, Goliath with
Goliath, yes. Yeah. Very good contrast because, you know, David E. Kelly, you know, some of his shows have really aged really well. I know some people say I liked L.A. Law back in the day, but not the final season. But if you watch The Practice and Boston Legal and even Mr. Mercedes and Goliath, you're going to have a lot of fun with his various quirks and recurring predicaments. And there's definitely huge fan bases for those shows. It's just you kind of got to do some digging for some reason. It's like people who saw them back when they were on, and then, you know, just they only collected the DVDs if, you know, they saw it in reruns. Yeah,
at least Goliath is on, I think it's on Prime. Fortitude is a little bit harder.
I think that one also, it was like six different companies changing it. And of course, you want to, not everyone wants to share the profits, which is a shame.
Yeah.
I can only hope the best for 24, but I think the fact that everyone wants more is a testament to its powerfulness. And I mean, because like people were even doing that with Deadwood, and we finally got the movie, and it's like, this is it, guys. This is as good as we're going to get. And it's pretty damn good for what it is.
Yeah. But one thing that I've always found notable about 24. And might be a reason to bring it back. And it's something that we really noticed in the convention is how much of a family all these cast and crew members are.
Especially when you did the panel. I mean, and if you can name more than one character on a hit show, that does mean something, you know, is like, and even when it's just one giant character arc, you know, now it means more than just, hey, I was a recurring guest, or I was just the villain, you know, of the season. And I mean, like you say, it's just all these characters just dynamite. And I mean, I even kind of get that just with, I mentioned the FBI shows earlier, those definitely are kind of trying to do what the 24 and Criminal Minds shows do really well, which is have the characters really gel and face just impossible decision. You, the viewer, are having to say, oh, what an idiot, or, well, I probably wouldn't have done anything different.
Yeah.
Played along and then quit or resigned or been killed in the light of duty, you know. And if anything, more shows definitely, I think, reference it more than we even realize. And they definitely use the same kind of arc as, like, six juicy episodes, can't look away.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely.
Oh, for sure, for sure. So, once again, man, thanks for helping sum it up. You're welcome back anytime.
Thank you for having me, man. It's been a pleasure and a lot of fun.
Anytime.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.